financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am good. And we have a guest today, and it's a familiar face.
I'm always happy when he comes on the show. So we have Senator Michael D. Brown, the non-voting shadow senator. He's also an economist, and I've asked him to be here today so that we could talk about money and other things. So welcome back, Senator Brown.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be with you. This is one of my favorite things to do, is to talk to you. And let me tell you that since you brought it up, and since it's tax day, and since I just put my check in the mail to the federal government, I have to point out that, yes, the people of the District of Columbia pay the highest per capita taxes in America, but yet we don't have a voting member of Congress, and we really need to change that. But that being said, let's move on to the things that you want to talk about.
Well, nice try, but I have one more little thing to talk about. Not a little thing, a couple of things for you, just to set the background for people about what you've been doing. So a shadow senator doesn't get paid. So you've been doing this out of the goodness of your heart. Maybe that's how politics should work. But we're talking about, what, 700,000 people in D.C.?
700,000 people, yes.
Yeah. 700,000 people in D.C. Yeah. You put a sign on your lawn about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
That I just saw posted on X, if anybody wants to go and look for it. Big warning sign, basically telling people, look, if you want to live in D.C., you might be giving up your basic civil right. You are giving up your basic civil right to vote. Now, 700,000 people, I have to wonder, out of 700,000 people, how many people you think, just ballpark, are unhappy with the way things are going with the economy today and what's going on with the government? Maybe those are separate questions, but can you give us some insight on what you feel in D.C.?
Well, you know, in D.C., there are no Republicans in D.C. I mean, there's like six of them, and we keep track of them with those little ankle bracelets. We're the most Democratic jurisdiction, and by Democratic, I mean Democratic Party, in America. 80% of registered voters that have a party affiliation are Democrats. When you win the Democratic primary in Washington, D.C., you don't even bother to go out on election day. You just go out and give donuts. You don't campaign, because no one who has ever won the Democratic primary has ever lost a general election. So we're never happy with any Republican, to be honest with you. You know, we're liberal Democrats. But now, especially, people in Washington, D.C. feel wounded. One reason is because of a recent move that was made in the budget process, in the budget bill that was passed by the House and now passed by the Senate. We lose $1.1 billion of our own money. I mean, this is ridiculous. We cannot spend $1.1 billion of our own tax money, money that we've raised in local taxes, and between now and October 30th. We have to cut $1.1 billion out of our budget because of the way Congress has handled the district. That we've been told that we should be treated like an agency instead of like any agency of the federal government. So they've cut this money out of our budget. Now, the hope is the Senate passed a standalone bill that would allow us to spend the money, but the House hasn't moved on it, and they would have to move on it. So right now, in this morning's paper, they cut out they said they have to cut out at least $417 million immediately out of our budget.
Okay,
to comply.
You know where I'm headed with this, right? Jobs, yeah. Jobs, jobs. I mean, my goodness, how many jobs are Americans going to lose, and where are they going to go? And what's going to happen to our economy when we start making cuts like that? And we are already making cuts like that. I know people, Jess probably knows people who have already lost their job with no consideration about whether they were talented or a good employee. Nothing, just, we're sorry, you're out of work. That cannot happen in a bubble. Anybody who has ever taken an economics course will tell you, you don't want job loss, okay? It trickles down in ways that you can't imagine. And I worry. People are asking me, you know, are we going into recession? Are we going into depression? I mean, people are worried about money. People that never paid attention to money are worried about money.
Well, and especially in the District of Columbia, you know, we pay the highest per capita taxes in America because we're the richest people in America. So we generally don't worry about it. But the federal government, which is what keeps us a top economy in the country, is being decimated. You know, 87,000 jobs from the Veterans Administration, USAID, you know, all sorts of other cuts. They're also talking about moving agencies into the states for some reason I don't understand. But right now we have Ohio and Vermont and Massachusetts and other states fighting over what federal agencies they can suck out of the District of Columbia. So the district's economy may be totally devastated by the time this is all over. So we're very, very worried about it. And, you know, and I got to tell you, when the president of the United States stands up there and says there's going to be short-term pain for long-term gain, he doesn't understand what it is to live paycheck to paycheck. Because we should all remember what John Kenneth Galbraith said, which is in the long run, we're all dead. So, you know, for many Americans, it's always right now. I grew up in a family that was in kind of middle class suburbia, but we were always broke. Always. We never owned a house, evicted many times for not paying the rent, cars repossessed. My mother was one of those women that dug nickels and dimes out of the couch to pay the $2 for the field trip when I was a kid in school. Never poor. Always had food to eat, always had people that loved me, always had a roof over my head,
But
but
always
broke.
scrambling.
And I've worked full time since I was 14 years old, which is why I stopped to do this when I was in my 50s, because I had made enough money that I decided I should give back somehow. And that's why I took a job that didn't pay me for 18 years. I don't know that my wife and kids were so happy about that, but I had enough money. I put all my kids through college. I figure, how much money do you need? Right. So that's why I did it. But I understand what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. And in the front page of the Washington Post today, there's an article about a farmer in North Carolina who can't figure out what he's going to do because of the uncertainty with tariffs. He just doesn't know. There's no way for him to plan how many people he needs to hire, how many crops, what the crops should be. You know, are we going to put a tariff on soybeans? Maybe you shouldn't grow them. You know, he doesn't know.
You know, you brought up two important points, I think. One, with your quote, made me think that because we try to be fair-minded as much as we can, but my point is, we're not hurting just Democrats. We're hurting Republicans too. We're hurting independents. We're hurting people who never voted, right? If you live in this country right now, you're getting hurt by this. And there's another quote that people are fond of flipping around, like, you know, hey, the person who dies with the most toys wins. Well, in my world, what that means is that you're spending almost every dollar you make, or you're leveraged to the hilt, and you've got these debt payments. And we talk a lot about student debt payments, but everybody's living on debt. They got car loans and mortgages. And when you start cutting jobs like this, you're going to have a real, real problem. And the second thing was really about people living paycheck to paycheck. People don't have savings. You know, we've been telling people for years, oh, you've got to have 6 months' worth of savings. I dare you to take a poll of the average American and ask who's got 6 months in liquid savings. Are there some? You betcha. But not the middle class or lower middle class or lower class, right? If we even have those classes anymore. So, I mean, the farmer, the big point that you brought up, I wanted to get back to is the planning. As an investment advisor or a financial planner, what our jobs are to tell people, this is what I see coming down the pike. Here's how to prepare. Here's what to do. Jess has heard me say this lately, like, all I can do is freeze like a rabbit in the head, in the headlights and say, okay, what we have to do right now is realize we're all in crisis management mode. And that means you make very conservative decisions. I was just talking to a doctor the other day who canceled an order for a machine at their hospital that was hundreds of thousands of dollars. He wasn't sure if the tariffs on China were going to bring that price way up, but more than that, he can't make a decision. He doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't, what was it I said a couple of weeks ago to you, Jess? Consistency and competency breeds confidence.
Yeah,
We
we
don't
were talking about
have
the
that.
market and about how that's so important, the certainty and the
Yeah.
consistency, and it's day to day at this point.
Yeah, and we don't have that. So, I'm happy to have a senator here, and I would welcome a Republican senator to come on too if they're willing to take me on.
If they're brave enough.
Bring it on, baby. Because there are some Republicans are starting to turn a little bit and say, this is not okay. This is hurting everybody, right? Can you put the shoe on the other foot for a moment, if it's even possible, and give us any insight as to what you think the good side of these tariffs might be? I was going to be more descriptive, but I'll just leave them at these tariffs.
Well, I really don't see a good side because what's happening is, there's two schools of thought about this, right? There's people out there saying he's using this as a negotiating tool. Well, if he uses it as a negotiating tool, he's getting his rear end kicked. He's giving into the Chinese on electronics. He's giving into car makers today. He's going to give in, I drink 16 cups of coffee. I guarantee you he's going to give in to the coffee people soon. So he's losing on the negotiation side. On the other side, to put tariffs on countries that are poor to begin with and have very low tariffs. We've seen this with some of the Indonesian countries that make all our clothes now. I worked my way through college and graduate school by working for a men's clothing store in the days, a very expensive men's clothing store in the days where all our clothes were made in America, all the clothes that we sold. You can't find anything made in America. I don't know if you go in far as clothes go. I mean, check the tags in your clothes. You see, they're all made in places like Sri Lanka and Indonesia and Thailand. I think I wrote to you in an email that when I studied tariffs, they were a tool. And this man seems to be using them as a weapon. And
I
I
agree.
really got to be honest with you. I don't know where this all comes from because look at all these businesses. I don't care if you're selling Bibles or it's a college or it's a steak business or it's a hotel in Atlantic City. This man has failed at every business he's ever been in. And now we expect him to rearrange the most complex government on the face of the earth. I mean, it's crazy to even think of that.
I knew we were never going to escape the politics on this show. There was no point in it. But, I complained about this when Trump ran the first time. And I said, I don't understand why nobody is talking about, or very few people were talking about, six bankruptcies. Why weren't we talking about the fact that he never paid his employees?
Yes.
Why was this not a basic American concern for the general person who can't figure this out? And, for themselves, who do you know that's filed six bankruptcies? Okay. But he's going to do
And
it with
live
the
to talk
American
about it.
government. Yeah. We're going
Yeah.
to do it with the American government if we're not
Right.
careful. Jess has heard me say this over and over and over again. If China calls our notes, we're done.
Yeah.
And
And
we're
I
ticking
mean,
them
and
off.
yeah. And the difference is that you would never hire this man to run your company, but politics is emotional. It's not a matter of sitting down and, I mean, that's what I thought. The same thought that you have, doctor, when he ran against Hillary Clinton. I said, let's look at their resumes. reality TV star, Secretary of State, 8 years in the White House, college graduate from, you know, from the best Ivy League schools. You wouldn't hire him as opposed to her, you know, but we don't use the front part of our brain to make political decisions. It's emotional.
Politics,
you know,
is perception, right?
It is. It really is. It's all perception. And and the Democrats, you know, first of all, the truest thing that's ever been said about the Democratic Party was Will Rogers, who said, "I belong to no organized political movement. I'm a Democrat." And that's our problem, is Democrats. We're the transgender people are so busy fighting with the gay, you know, the LGBT community, and we're so busy trying to be purists on another front, or you know, nothing's ever perfect enough for the Democrats. So we fight with ourselves as much as we fight with the Republicans. Whereas, you know, there's another old saying in Washington, which is Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line.
That's right.
And we have to take responsibility for this man being elected. But let me just bring up something I wanted to mention before about being poor, because I was on the brink of it for a long time in childhood. And it's a downward spiral, right? You take out the payday loan and you pay 21% on it. Then you can't pay that. So you take out the car title loan and you pay 30%. You just keep on going down and down and down once the spiral starts. So, and that has, as you well know, economic repercussions all across the board.
It does.
So, you know, I think that's one of the dangers here, but we're emotional about our politics, and we should. My podcast, the tagline for my podcast is Make America Think Again.
And we will come back with much more, maybe talk about your podcast. I would like to get the Money Doctor's number. I think a lot of people have money questions right now.
413-773-3333.
And we'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with Senator Michael D. Brown and Francis Ram. Financial Fitness right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we have a senator in the house today.
We do. We have Senator Michael D. Brown with us, joining us once again. He's been on the show before, but we're always happy to have him back. The two of us get off often on not just politics, but economics. He's got a background in economics as well. Just before the break, we were talking about people who struggle with money. Our concern is that that class is getting larger by the moment. We're putting more people out of work. Expenses are going up, right? You know, that's what I think's going on. And I think the regular human is losing right now.
Even for me, I was thinking about, and you and I have talked about it before, trading my car, and I don't have a car payment now. And now I'm thinking, now's probably not a good time to do that. So it's hard to know whether you should put everything on hold for how long. How long is this temporary pain we're hearing about going to last? All those questions are in, like, I think, everyday people's minds.
Yeah. And the estimates are that people will tolerate this for about a year or longer. So, you know, before they really speak up. And yet we are seeing protests across the country. The areas that I've seen have been more mature adults, but I'd like to see the younger people stand up and say, I'm not taking this anymore. This is my future. And I'm not going to be able to afford to get off my parents' couch if this continues. What do you think, Senator?
Well, I think that young people, one of the places that we're in right now is they're among the most disgruntled. So I'm not sure whether they're not out there. You know, I know that I say to my kids, I found my first job out of college in the newspaper, and they laugh at me. They go, Dad, that's not how it's done anymore, you know.
Yeah.
And I have three college educated children, two of them who are now older, one's 32 and one just turned 30. They're making their way, but the youngest one, 27, can't find a decent job. She has to work as a server at night to make ends meet. And and you know, this is a different world than we had. Now I've been out of college a long time, but we never doubted. See, this again at the emotional level, I never doubted that when I got out of college, I would have a good job and a good career and whatever I wanted, you know, from that.
Yeah, it was just find it, right? It was just like, where do I want to work? Yeah.
Right. Kids don't believe that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I have a 21-year-old co-host on my show just for that reason, so that we can find out what the angst is. And she, it's funny, she was scared to go to the protests. I protested a lot on the Vietnam War, but she is an American citizen,
yep,
born in Texas, but Brazilian. She's mm-hmm. Brazilian. But her father was stationed in the United States, and she was born in Texas. She has birthright citizenship, dual citizenship. She said, I'm afraid they're snatching people up.
That's a valid point. I don't think it's any secret. I'm not advertising it, but I'll just say that, you know, for the first time in my life, I stood out with a protest sign. Now, maybe the young people are protesting online, but we need to see bodies out there. We need to see you on the news. We need to see thousands of people showed up if you're going to make a change. If you're going to affect a change in stopping something like tariffs or reckless behavior at the presidential level, you got to hit the House and the Senate on a constituency. We're not going to vote you in anymore. And that's the only way people are going to start changing their mind, because they don't have anything to lose right now. They've got control. They're just watching it happen. And I think you're absolutely right. The Democrats are not getting it done.
They're not getting it done. They can't figure out where they went wrong. And, you know, they have gone wrong, because the world has changed for young people. And we need to find a way to fix that as Democrats. And we have a, you know, old saying in politics is, it's one thing to talk the talk and another to walk the walk. We talk the talk just fine. We need to find a way to walk the walk for kids, you know, especially for young people.
Well, we were busy trying to take the high road somehow, thinking that that was going to work. And it's a little delusional these days. There is no high road anymore. There's just, you know, hang on. You talk about sayings you have. There's something that I say over and over and over again to people who come to me with financial problems, and they say, oh, I did this wrong and I did that wrong. And I want to fix what I did wrong. And they're beating themselves up about it. And I say, you know what? That's not useful. It's useful to understand what you did wrong, but now we just call it so what, and you don't do it again. You need a path forward. I can't figure out why, with some of the great leaders that we've had, we don't have that path forward. But we're too darn slow in terms of politics, right? And Trump is doing like, I do it now and I ask for forgiveness later. Wait, right. Laws? What are laws? Right. We don't have laws. Right. Don't worry about it. Let the court catch up with me. By the time they do, I mean, he's a felon, okay? He's in the presidency.
Is there anybody in America more experienced with the court system than Donald Trump? I can't imagine that he hasn't been in court one day in his adult life. But, you know, the difference between you, doctor, and a young person, you going out with, not that you're not young anymore, but going out with a sign, is you have context. And they don't. Young people don't. This is the era they've grown up in. My co-host was born during the Obama administration, which is hard for me to fathom.
Fathom,
I'm
71
years old. Yeah. But so they don't have the context you have. You understand that there are things you can do to make the world better, and they're not sure what to do. So they have latched onto a man who says, you know, I just got to point this out, because I think this really explains the situation, is that one of my favorite movies of all times is a movie called The Music Man, about a con man that comes into an Iowa town and cons everybody. And what does he do first? First, he says, you have a problem.
There's trouble here in River City.
Right. You have trouble in River City. And that's exactly what Donald Trump's done.
Yeah.
He's walked in and said, make America great again. And
as
all these
kids
are saying, well, America must have been great, but something happened.
Right.
America's still great. It's always been great. But you create the problem so that you can be the solution.
That's right.
And that's what
you bring
done.
up You bring up the most important point of all of this, I think, and it's fear. People don't make their money decisions well when they're afraid. People don't make political decisions well when they're afraid. I'm going to tell you flat out, I was concerned about going out to a protest. First of all, maybe I'm not a superstar, but I'm known in the area. So I'm risking my business, right? I'm risking all the people that don't agree with me seeing me and saying, I will never do business with her. Okay. But, and I've avoided this for a long time. I've tried to stay apolitical, but there comes a point where I have to say, you know what? I don't care whether what your political preference is. When you start harming Americans, you lose my support. You lose my vote. We should not be harming Americans on any level, particularly about money. And so I really want to thank you for coming on and talking to me about this. And I'd like you to come back and we can talk more about money. I just want to say, I'd love it if you have one tip. I'm putting you on the spot, but if you have one tip for somebody just listening, just a basic family member listening, thinking, what can I do to make things better or to prepare for what might be coming? What would you say?
I don't know. That's a great question. It's a very hard question to answer. I mean, I can tell you what I'm doing. I'm trying to hunker down. I'm trying to hunker down and stay the course, right? Your financial advisor. I live to a certain extent because I'm retired off my 401k. I'm trying not to look at it, you know, and right? Because I don't want to put myself in shock. But to talk about you being concerned about going out with the sign, you know, the Trump administration has basically required me to take my sign down. And I want to fight. I really do want to fight it. But we're going to sell our house next month. And I don't want to start a fight on my front lawn when I'm trying to sell my house.
That's
so
fear.
We're going to take the sign down.
That's fear.
That's right. And what you know, it's nice to, this is another political saying, it's nice to be loved, but it's better to be feared. It's more productive to be feared.
Yep. Well, we're out of time, I'm sorry to say. Wow. But I would say the same thing, though. I would say hunker down, watch your pennies, don't buy things you don't need right now.
Right.
You know, but this all has an effect on the economy. You stop spending, the economy suffers too. As an individual person watching your money, I think you got to do it right now.
Yeah. How about the guy that ran out and bought the iPhone and then 2 days later realized there's not going to be tariffs on the iPhone? You know, I mean, how do you make decisions in this environment?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having me on, Doctor, and Jess, and I appreciate it. You've got a great show, and I hope people are following your advice.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Francis, can I get your phone number?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
I'm erecting this sign on my front lawn on behalf of the 700,000 disenfranchised people of the District of Columbia. My house is the first house to come across coming in the district, and everybody that enters our city should know that the people of the District of Columbia who pay their taxes and fight in wars and are exemplary citizens do not have the basic rights to citizens.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
How many panic calls have you been getting recently?
I tell you, well, not too many panic calls.
That surprises me.
Well, I tend to have people in safer things usually, right?
Got
But
it.
a little bit more conservative or balanced. But I did get a message from one or two people even asking me if their money was safe in the bank. So
Oh, yeah.
what I'm seeing is that people are paying attention to the news and the market right now. The last 3 days, I should say that we pre-record this show. This is a Tuesday, April 8th, when we're recording this show. So if you see any ticker symbols or anything at the bottom, it's from April 8th. And before we did the show, probably. So what I will say is that people who never watch the markets, who don't pay that much attention to the news, are thrown into the mix right now because they're worried about their 401ks. The average person, right, is who
Right.
I'm talking to, worried about their 401ks. So what's very difficult about that is they often don't have a real frame of reference, some familiarity with how to interpret what's going on in the market. And so they panic more easily, but they act more slowly. They don't know what to do. That's an uncomfortable position for people. Now, as you know, I try not to be political on this show. I don't think my politics are have anything to do with somebody else's decision. But I don't think I'm alone in saying that the market requires competency and consistency. And if it gets those two things, that equals confidence. So I will call those the three C's. Competency and consistency equal confidence. When the market doesn't have those things, it gets the fourth C, chaos. And
And that
that's,
seems exactly where we are. I'm hearing a lot of
wow.
terms thrown around, like that I've learned from this show, like bear market and recession and things we've kind of hit on a little bit before. But yeah, I think everybody probably really needs to hear this stuff right now.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we hit a bear market in 3 days. We hit bear market territory. We haven't done that since 1987, and we did it in 3 days.
Wow.
I'm not saying that like it's a great accomplishment, okay?
We're not
And I'm
trying to do that yet.
sorry to be laughing at all because it is not funny to be in this position. But you have to understand that what's happening to most people right now is what we call whipsaw, right? Panic, oh my gosh, look at my 401k going down, or I'm afraid to open the envelope. Followed by, hey, wait, we're getting some gains. Let's be clear that what we've got at the time we're recording this show are not gains. They are losses we're starting to get back some of. But
I feel like the people that I've talked to, the people that are in their 50s and 60s are the ones that are really worried versus 20s, you'll make it back as we talk about. But if you're getting ready to retire and then you look at your statement and it's just demolished, it's hard to not panic.
yes, I heard a statement from the president actually that said people looking to retire right now aren't worried about the day-to-day fluctuation. I'm
I saw that as
paraphrasing.
well.
Oh my goodness. Tell that
Not
to
the people I'm
somebody.
talking to. Yeah, not the people I'm talking
No.
to.
No, I mean, just think about it. Would you? Would you be worried about the day-to-day fluctuation if you're knocking on retirement's door? Yeah, you would. Because if you cash out of those accounts when you have those losses, they are no longer paper losses. They are now real losses, and you need that money. You've relied on that money to retire, which is another reason why we talk about as you're getting closer to retirement, you need to start moving money into more conservative areas. Bonds, if you're working with a broker, I use a lot of fixed indexed annuities to accomplish that. Sometimes people go to high yield savings accounts, things like that.
Can I take a quiz here? That means divestment is what I've learned from you.
Diversity. Yeah, and
Diversity,
divestment, right.
divesting, yes.
Yes, if you're unwinding your investment portfolio, you might call it divesting. Exactly, right. So, where things get really sticky right now is that we don't have any consistency. One day it's, I'm going to slap these tariffs on. The next day it's, I might negotiate, right? But maybe I'll do 50% on China, who will have no real choice if they're going to protect their economy, but to retaliate. And then we say,
And
but
they've
don't
come back,
retaliate.
and they've come back strongly and said they're doing this. So
Boy.
it day to day, it's actually not day to day, it's minute to minute. So you're right, it's hard to act in that kind of an environment.
Lest I remind people that China, if they ever call our notes, we are in trouble. Okay, so America has had a history of setting the financial pace for the world. When we start to withdraw from a world market, as the rhetoric has been lately, that creates more of what you see in the world markets. It isn't just that the US economy tanked over a three-day period. Hong Kong had the worst drop that they've had. They dropped 13%. They haven't done that in decades. Let me just go back for a moment because we did a show about tariffs. Little did I know that they were going to be levied in a day or two after I said that, but we did the show about tariffs. And the point I was trying to make is that tariffs are a tax that we pay on products. The idea is we're going to slap a tariff on these countries and they will fall to their knees because they're going to have to pay so much money. It's not quite how that works, right? Who's going, okay. You slap a 50% tariff on China. How much are you going to pay for your next computer if it's made in China or if all the parts are made in China? It isn't China paying it, it's us paying it, right? It's the consumer that has to tolerate that. So that brings me to my main concern here, which is who gets hurt? Who gets hurt by this are the working class.
I was just looking today, and you probably know all about this, and if I'm getting it wrong, please tell me. But I was seeing too that there's a loophole now also being closed where if you're buying stuff, it used to be under $800, you could get it without all these tariffs and taxes on it. Now they're closing that. So if you're ordering, just say Shein or Temu or any of those places, probably have the names, the Temu pronunciation wrong, but it could be up to $50 an item. They're adding all these taxes on. So where you could still order under 800, you can't anymore.
I think you have it right. And I think even the pronunciation of Temu was right. It brings up an important point. The working class will get hurt, right? The average family of four can expect to pay about $3,800 more a year. That's if we don't buy in a car. I mean, we talked about that, right? How much a car is going up. But just your average, day-to-day groceries, whatever you're going to do for your regular living expenses, because of the tariffs that are coming in. The average family of four is estimated to have an increased expense of about $3,800 a year. Now, who gets hurt really hard? The people who can least afford it. The low-income families. Those are the families that shop more on Temu, that shop more in, they buy more imports, right? They're looking for a deal and they don't have the cash to say, I don't care. I'm not shopping there. I'm going to shop at my mom and pop store down the street. They have to really watch their pennies. And that sometimes means, most often means, that lower income families buy more imported goods.
You know, we'd all love to support local and like your local bookstore or whatever else, but in reality, you know, we get a lot of products from the Walmarts and the Targets and the things that, I mean, that's just how you make it week to week or month to month
That's
for a
right.
lot of families.
Even people who don't think they're buying imports are buying imported goods. We don't make a lot of things here. One of the politicians who will remain nameless at the moment came out and said, millions of jobs are going to flock to the United States to put those little tiny screws in iPhones. Okay, it's not going to happen. We don't work for $2 an hour. And if we have to pay Americans to do those jobs, we can't afford the product in the end. So to go back to lower income families for a moment, if a family of four middle income is going to pay about $3,800 more a year, if these tariffs stay on for a year, another thing we don't know, then lower income families will see 2 to 2.5 times that burden. That means their purchasing power was just reduced. It was just cut by that amount. So this will hit lower income families especially hard.
It feels also like it's a double whammy. You're also then combining it with the federal cuts to like food programs and other resources that you might have availed yourself to before. So now not only do you not have those, you also have 3,800 more.
I don't think there's any way to see it differently. I know that people will say, well, it's short-term gain for long-term, short-term pain for long-term gain. I don't know. When you're ticking off the world economy like this, even if you get your way temporarily, and maybe in the end I'll be wrong about this, right? How long do you think that's going to last when you've angered everybody? Remember when we were talking about tariffs, I said to you, I don't think we should tick off Canada and Mexico, right? Just on car prices alone. But I know that there are people who believe, and everybody, that's what America is supposed to be, is that everybody is welcome to their opinion, right? I know that there are people who will see it as there, he's just negotiating a deal. He's going to press hard and they're going to bend to his will and we're going to be better because of it. That remains to be seen. But right now, I'm looking at a lot of people very worried about their 401ks, asking, what are we going to do to move to safety and things of that nature. And I think you're right. The cutbacks and the, let's not forget the job losses, enter DOGE, right? We're hurting our economy. And the sad part about this is when it happened because of COVID, we had to scramble and deal with it, right? Politicians were spending their 24 hours a day trying to figure out how to save us from this. Right now, we have a self-inflicted problem.
It's also interesting too, because obviously I cover the news and I'm reading a lot about it, but there are a lot of financial people in the financial world that are backers, Republican backers, that are breaking from this and saying, I'm looking at this and I'm not really seeing any way it's not bad. So that's interesting to me too. That I think makes people a little bit more nervous too.
Well, that's why I said, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see any other way to see this. I mean, you're saying it back to me, and we did not talk about this before the show. What are these families going to do who are experiencing cuts, job losses, increased expenses, and complete uncertainty about whatever savings they may have? This is not a comfortable place for people to be as an investor. You can't make decisions based on this stuff.
So I'm hoping that you have some tips maybe to
I do.
kind of calm the waters right now. We'll get to those in the second half, but in the meantime, I do want to get your phone number.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. We're talking about kind of a difficult topic today, but one that's on everybody's minds that I'm talking to.
There's no way I couldn't talk about it today. Now, by the time people see this show, you need to remember that we filmed it on April 8th, and my guess is there will be something very different, whatever that
Right.
might be. And
Something new, yeah.
that's the point, is we cannot, as advisors, right? People are not making the same decisions. They're not making the decisions the same way that we're trained to make them, which is pay attention to whether you're going into a bear market or into a bull market. And, are your clients close to retirement? Are they not? How is their portfolio diversified? What sectors seem to be doing well in the market? We don't have any clue right now. I mean, I'm going to say that I do have some tips for people about some things you can do that may be useful, of course, right? But I think every advisor I know is just saying, I'm just glued to the television and I'm exhausted watching it because I can't find a direction. We were in a bear market for like a minute. We like bingo, bear market. Worst 3 days since 1987. We haven't been there, right? And then the next day, oh, look, here's the market coming back. Why? Now, here's my really personal theory about why this might be happening. And believe me, I am going way out on a limb here because I haven't heard anybody else say this. But, the one thing that I can hold true to all the time is that the market likes certainty. You've heard me say it when an election is coming up or when there's a crisis. As soon as the market has some certainty, it likes it. Now, what you're seeing today with some gains coming back is that there's been a little pullback from the Trump administration to say, well, instead of just saying, we're not going to talk, here's your tariffs, here's your pill, swallow it. Now they're starting to say, well, we might talk about this, we might negotiate about this. And when people are saying, are these permanent or temporary tariffs? We get the double talk, the double speak of, well, they could be temporary or they could be permanent. I mean, President Trump may be trying to keep, everybody in a foreign country on edge, but while he's doing that, he's keeping us on edge as well. So, my personal theory, as I was getting to, about why the market might be tolerating this better than we expected it to. Boy, I'm careful about that for the moment, is that in some crazy way, the sort of uncertainty has become more normal. So in some way, we're becoming desensitized to the uncertainty. It's not such a surprise when the Trump administration flips on a dime and says, well, now we're going to do this. Or we're going to go from, I'm going to double down to no way I'll negotiate in 24 hours. I do hear people speaking angrily about, you know, Nero fiddled while Rome burned, right? Playing golf and doing those kinds of things while the market is tanking. And just, you know, I'm having parties with billionaires. And I had to wonder, what are the conversations with the billionaires? Are they shorting the market? You know, I don't know. So that stuff is hard, and it is difficult to not feel political about it, even though, you know, I am sensitive to both sides of this. The side of harming the American public, I don't see where that has a place in politics. You're supposed to be working for us, right? That's what government does. And in the end, you know, if this turns out to be a great thing, I'll swallow my pride and say, boy, I was wrong. But
I was going to say this. Yeah, this is one of those times where you'd be happy to be wrong. But talking about not being on either side, it's not just Democrats or Republicans that are losing money. It's everyone. It's going to be more expensive for everyone. So for me, just like you, it's not about whether you agree or don't agree with the majority of the administration. It's like it's hurting everyone. And it's hard to see, like you were talking about in the first half, a little bit of pain now. Okay, well, how long is that pain going to last? And especially if you're near retirement age, can you afford to hang in there for however long?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because there are estimates floated already by people who do this for a living, right? Analyze politics for a living and analyze the economy. And it seems to be about a year. People seem to say that the American public will tolerate at least I shouldn't say the American public. The stat I've heard is that the backers, Trump's backers, his base, will tolerate this for about a year. A year is way longer than I would like to see anybody have to tolerate this. There will be people who will be flat broke, homeless, hungry in a year. I mean, in way less than a year. Most people today don't have more than a week or two in savings. You know, if they have a few months, they consider themselves lucky. And sometimes that savings is in their 401ks, and they're thinking, well, I can borrow against my 401k if I need to. And they're watching it go down. So, so I did say that I would have some things that you can do. But I just want to say that the quote about don't be a panickin, right, a coined word, panickin, the markets move rapidly on something we call fear index. So I'm not surprised that the president would come out and say, don't panic, right? Because the markets were already moving drastically over the weekend. I was not looking forward to waking up Monday morning and looking at what the world markets were doing before ours opened. But you have to remember that that fear index can be very dangerous. And the place it can be, one of the places it can be the most dangerous, is for the people we're talking about in the beginning of the show, which is the people that, which are the people that don't have their finger on the pulse of the market. They're maybe not large investors. They probably have some CDs, some savings accounts, you know, a checking account. Maybe they've got a mutual fund or two. And they're wondering, should I pull my money out of the bank because there's a threat that FDIC will be dismantled. And so I want to say you want to be very, very careful about that. If you ever saw It's a Wonderful Life, you know what a run on a bank is, all right? You don't want to create a run on the banks because you're afraid, all right? What you want to do is pay attention to what's happening. Even if the FDIC was dismantled and privately held, that doesn't mean that your money would not be safe. It might. I don't want to see the FDIC dismantled, believe me. But just pay attention to what is real, not what your gut tells you, and really do lean into the news like this. And, you know, if you only look at it when you're worried, it's kind of like making a budget when you have no job, right? You have to kind of learn about the stuff as time goes on. There's one other thing I wanted to talk about before I give you some real solutions here is, and it's the comment that, well, only 50% of Americans have money in the stock market, so we don't really care. Well, first of all, 50% of Americans, a lot
of people. Yeah.
I mean, holy cow, if that were accurate, but I'm going to say it's way higher than that because anybody with a 401k, unless they're completely in the fixed account, which is almost nobody, has stocks. They have mutual funds. Mutual funds are made up of stocks. Okay. They have money in the market. So, you know, if you own a mutual fund or you own some bonds or you own some stocks directly, you've got money in the market. Now, I told you that I would say a few things that people could think of. And again, because this is changing all the time, you know, I don't know. But what I'm thinking is, first of all, money in the bank is probably safer than money in the market right now. Will you give up some gains? You might. If the market bounces back and you have gains, that's your trade-off, right? If you, and I want to preface this by saying I'm not giving anybody advice here. This is an educational show about that, right? So that you can ask your advisor these things. Would I be better off if I moved some of my money into safety? And you can do that within your 401k, usually online with a click of a button, slide some money over there, right? You need to be aware that if you're going to sell shares in your 401k, if you're going to move money, it's not going to happen till the close of business that day. So don't wake up in the morning and say, I don't like the way the market is and push the button without talking to your advisor, okay? The second thing you can do is, you know, certainly you could do it in a bank. You could do some CDs. There are decent rates on CDs right now. It's pretty short-term commitment. And you could also do high-yield savings accounts or money markets, all safer kinds of money, not really linked to the bank, to the market, right? They give you a fixed rate of interest. This is what you're going to earn for this period of time. And then the last thing I'm going to tell you that I like to see people do is to pick up some indexed annuity dollars, right? To put some money into indexed annuities, because there you have a sort of a blend. You have the safe money because they usually have a guaranteed floor, right? Your principal is guaranteed plus, in some cases, a minimum interest rate guarantee. And you have earnings linked to the market. So you could have some money. This isn't for all of your money any more than anything is. But you could have some of your money in something like an indexed annuity, which would give you the safety you're seeking right now, backed by the strength of the insurance company and then the guarantee funds in whatever state you're in that you purchase it in. And then on top of that, if the market does rebound and goes up, you will get some of those market gains. Now, could you out earn it in your stocks or your mutual funds if you stayed there? Maybe. You could also out lose it.
I was going to say you could also tank it. Yeah.
So especially when you're getting close to retirement, that might be a good, plus you could get a lifetime income, you know, at some point in the future from it that would be reliable. So
this might be a big question, but what happens if the FDIC was dismantled?
Well, it's already been hit a bit. But what happens if it's completely dismantled? I think the idea is that it would be privatized. And so in some way, private agencies would then insure your money.
But if you already have money in the bank, would they kind of take over for the FDIC?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we don't have any history of this. That's the thinking. Yeah. That's the thinking. But do you really want that? Privatizing government is one thing. There are a lot of people who believe that privatizing government has its merit, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes to a contract that you created with a bank when you put your money in there and said, I'm going to put my money here because it's FDIC insured and maybe insured beyond that, SDIF, right? So I'm going to agree to put my money here because that's appealing to me. Yeah. When you start to remove that sort of guarantee or even privatize it, you'll hurt the banks as well because people won't have a reason. If you're going to take on risk, you want it to be because you have a chance for higher earnings, right? So if you want safety and you're going to put your money in the bank and they take away the safety feature, what's the point?
I'm also hearing that some people are buying gold.
So people will always make decisions like that. Like, where is my money going to be safe? Am I going to buy gold? Well, what's the price of it? What do you think it will go to? I mean, that's like anything else. You can say it's a metal And so it has an intrinsic value, and you would be right in thinking that, but you have to be able to sell it to someone who has money to buy it.
True.
If you're going to convert it to food.
Every morning when you get up to kind of take a look at what it's doing at that point. And I can imagine as an advisor, it's got to be hard what direction to point your clients in.
Well, yeah. So I work as more of a consumer advocate than an advisor at this stage, right? So what I'm doing is bringing news to you and saying, this is what's going on, teaching you to think about it a different way, maybe, or to maybe hold up the mirror and say, this is what I think you might want to consider. Mm-hmm. And then talk about what are your options. You know, you don't have to do them with me, right? You can do them with your advisor or by yourself or whatever you want, but you should have a place, a safe place that you can go to where you can get information like this that is not necessarily selling you a product, right? I'm not,
right.
Nothing about this show that is saying you have to buy these things, right? Might you buy something through us if you decide to work with us? Yeah, you might, but it's not the basis of the show, right? So I just, you know, I think that people are really, I mean, we could go on forever about this, but people are really worried. I don't think it will, I don't think the market will settle down very much. I think it's been choppy and it's getting choppier as we move along, unless something happens, unless there's litigation that says you can't put tariffs on. There's seven, as of yesterday, I think there were seven Republicans that had signed on to that bill. The House would be tougher, but there's a bill about the president needs Congress before he can put tariffs on. If that passes, that could settle the market down a bit. Maybe, right? That's a little certainty. Then there's some certainty about something. But, you know, what are people doing right now? They're sticking their head in the sand. They're doing things like Megabucks in the middle of all this has raised a ticket to $5.
Oh, wow.
And I see these ads for Jackpocket where you can scratch tickets on your phone.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's
I'm
just
getting
what we
bombarded.
Need.
Yeah, I'm getting bombarded with work from home, you know. So just be cautious about your money. Don't lash out into some get-rich-quick scheme because you're worried and you say, well, I might as well do whatever. Get some professional help and make thoughtful, prudent decisions. And you can do it pretty easily, I think, if you reach out to advisors.
And what is your phone number if someone wants to reach out to ask you some questions about this or anything, really?
Yes, they can reach us at 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram on WHMP. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.